I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Heads up, folks. We're going to be talking about IVF and the emotional and physical toll it can take on the would-be parents. If this is something that may upset you, please, please take care of yourself and feel free to skip this episode. Fertility Network UK have a list of regional support groups and a support line that you might find useful, so please check them out at fertilitynetworkuk.org. Okay, we're going to start the show. How do you make a baby? It's easy, right? It happens all the time, and for many people, when they least expect it. But what happens when you really want that baby, but nothing is happening? This is episode 2 of Black Ballad Presents The Survival Guide, and I'm Jandela Benson, head of editorial at Black Ballad. Last episode, we spoke about when to decide to have a baby, and this episode, we're going to talk about what happens when you've decided you're ready, but your body isn't being so cooperative.
I was a typical little girly girl. Loved my dolls, my push chairs, all those kind of little role play things, moms and dads kind of thing. So in my mind, it was always like, you know, like that Disney princess kind of life. Mm. You know, Cinderella was my favorite. And it was, yeah, like imagine getting married and just having a family. I wasn't really, not that I wasn't thinking about my career, but yeah, I remember thinking from a very young age that, yeah, I cannot wait to have a family of my own, yeah.
That's Grace. She's 31 and lives in London, although she's originally from Derby, if you couldn't tell from her lovely accent. Like many of us, she had her life planned out. She knew what she wanted and when she wanted it by.
Thought I'd be married by 23, have a first child by 26. Just thought it would just be simple, really. So as soon as I got to 23, and then I was like, okay, I'm not meeting this life goal. I felt a little bit of pressure. I can now say life don't go the way that you think it's gonna go, but yeah, I would say that was like my timeline when I was younger. I thought that's the age I was going to be. Definitely, I think the pressure came from myself and maybe seeing people around me, actually seeing more of my peers getting married. Yeah, kind of put more pressure on myself. Like I wanted to get married even more. I wanted to have kids straight away, to where in some ways I kind of feel maybe I did kind of, I wouldn't say I pressured my husband. I think I probably, I was kind of persuasive to try for a family. I think men think differently in regards to that anyway, but I was definitely like, yeah, like I'm not saying that we didn't intentionally try for a child, but it was, if it happens, then yeah, like I'm cool with that. Like I would like to be a young mom, have lots of energy, you know, for my child. I mean, I don't think it matters how old you are when you have children. I've learned, you know, you just burn energy when you've got children regardless of how old you are. But yeah, I did feel like the younger I was, like before 30, like I need to have children. That was in my mind. Yeah, get married. Yeah, let's have children, definitely.
So you have two consenting adults in a loving relationship who are ready to start having children. That's obviously the perfect start to your path to parenthood, right? What could go wrong?
I think if I'm honest, I was probably a bit naive in the fact that I didn't even think about there being issues getting pregnant. I just thought, I'm still young, I'm below 30, and I think I was of the mind that, well, I wouldn't have issues until I'm like, say, over 35. So I kind of thought, yeah, like, it's not going to take long. I knew that it wouldn't necessarily be within the first month. I was aware that, you know, some women, it takes a couple of months for them to conceive. So within our first year of being married and trying, but then I say trying to conceive, but it wasn't stressful. It wasn't like, okay, we've got to have a baby this month kind of thing. It was just like, if it's, you know, kind of like, I guess we were just expecting it to happen. And then as months went by, I was more like, okay, recording my body temperature, and started to look a bit more into diet. What else did I do? And I think I got ovulation tests as well. Yeah. At one point I got ovulation tests as well. So gradually, as the months were going, it was just playing on my mind more. I'm like, okay, I've got to do this to make it happen, kind of thing, which did bring more stress, if I'm honest. We did have pressure from like family. So it wasn't just necessarily that I had the pressure from myself wanting to conceive. We did have pressure even from people that were not necessarily related, but expecting you because you're married now. And I remember being at like weddings and, you know, aunties and uncles coming up and saying, oh, where's this baby and that kind of thing. And although it's all meant well, it's not meant to offend, but because, you know, naturally anyone who is in a long-term relationship, like, that's what you expect. But at the same time, like, although it wasn't meant to hurt, it did hurt because actually people don't realize that you are actually trying. And it's as if the assumption is made that, oh, because you've not conceived yet, oh, maybe they're just focusing on their career, or maybe they have all these other goals. But actually, that's not necessarily the case. You don't know why a couple haven't conceived and, you know, they haven't got pregnant yet. And I think sometimes people can be too quick to like make comments. And again, although a lot of the time it's probably not meant to hurt or to offend. However, that said, I do know people who have had, you know, a lot of kind of comments where it doesn't sound like it was meant not to offend, if you get me. But yeah, like, I think people just need to be kind and just think before they speak. I think nowadays it's fortunately becoming a lot more common, or a lot more, we're being a lot more open about it. And hopefully with that, people are just going to start considering the fact that they don't know what journey a couple are on before they kind of make the assumption that, you know, they just don't want children, because that's probably not it.
Grace then began doing a bit of research into fertility and women's health in general to see if there were any tips she could pick up that might help her increase her chances at conceiving. But watching people around her getting pregnant left, right and centre made things really hard.
I gradually started to kind of like have feelings towards people, you know, that, oh, like, why are they conceiving now and they've only just got married or whatever and I'm not conceiving yet. And I kind of felt, in some ways, I guess my feelings weren't, yeah, I guess I had feelings of jealousy in some way because they had gotten pregnant before me. I didn't really feel like there was anyone I could really talk to because I didn't want it to look like, you know, I was still happy for people that were getting pregnant and I didn't want it to look like I was resentful towards people. You know, this is a beautiful thing that they've got, but yeah. I kind of internalized it and made it like, what about me kind of thing. So I would talk to my husband about it. And, you know, gradually as time was going on, like, I did speak to my husband, but I did keep a lot of things to myself and a lot of the feelings that I started to feel, you know, just thinking, what if something's wrong with me? And there wasn't anyone that I felt that I could turn to. And there probably would have been someone if I'd reached out, but I just didn't feel like, you know, again, I remember having a couple of friends who were pregnant during the time, and I thought, well, if I just mention it to them, it's like, I don't want to burden them with my burden and make them feel bad because they're pregnant and I'm not. Whenever I saw someone that was pregnant, it was kind of hard to, I guess, hide how I was feeling, I think. I would, you know, again, I'm happy for friends that are getting pregnant, but because I'm not, it was very hard to hide how I was feeling. I feel like I don't know if in some ways it might not have come across as genuine, and which is a real shame.
Official guidance says that if you've been trying to conceive unsuccessfully for 12 months, you should start seeking medical advice. According to Black Ballard's motherhood survey conducted earlier this year, 52% of us waited 2 years or more before doing this. Grace approached her GP after 14 months of not conceiving and finally got a referral to a fertility specialist after 16 months or so, which of course was a relief. But just going to her appointments presented other obstacles to overcome.
The reception is like the wait. You've got a waiting area where you go to, like, you know, say that you've arrived for your appointment, is also the early pregnancy waiting area. So that was really, really hard. Like, oh my gosh, like sometimes I would arrive and it's just like, just fighting back tears. Unless you're like, you know, trying for a baby, you realize that you're not getting pregnant. Like, you know nothing about infertility unless you have to go for it, unless you're going through, you know, those issues. So I didn't know anything, and I'd had no problems with my periods or you know, my menstrual cycle throughout my teens, you know, throughout my early adulthood. Like, so for me, it was like, okay, so how, do I have underlying issues that I know nothing about, and I'm here and you're talking to me like I should kind of know what you're talking about, kind of thing. And it was very overwhelming because you're already in a very, you know, you're emotionally and mentally on a downward spiral, because even the fact that you've got to this point is kind of like you didn't imagine that you'd have to get to that point anyway. So it's kind of like the uncertainty and the fear of like what's to come. So it's quite overwhelming to like get all the medical terminology that they're giving you and then just managing your own emotions at the same time. It was difficult.
Grace knew a bit about the various underlying things that can cause fertility issues in women, such as polycystic ovary syndrome and endometriosis. So when she and her husband were given the diagnosis of unexplained infertility, aka there's no reason that we can see why you shouldn't be able to get pregnant, there was relief, but also confusion.
It's such a difficult diagnosis in that there's basically the standard testing in the NHS doesn't kind of give you everything that it could be. So unexplained infertility, from the research that I have looked at briefly, has shown, you know, there could be issues with like autoimmune issues. Issues that is not picked up basically through the standard testing. And so that kind of changed my thoughts. And it was like, okay, so the doctor was saying, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't get pregnant. But then actually looking into it a bit more, there could be other underlying issues that are hindering us from conceiving that we would probably need to go privately. But they didn't explain that to us. Like, that's something that we were having to find out ourselves. So even now, it's kind of like, okay, can we still get pregnant naturally? Or are we still going to have to go through, you know, if we want a second child, are we still having to go through assisted conception? So for unexplained infertility, there's a lot of uncertainty about if you can conceive naturally or not.
But initially, before Grace looked into the limits of NHS fertility testing, they decided to continue trying to conceive. After all, the doctors had told them that there was no medical reason why they shouldn't be able to.
There was a lot of emotional, mental strain, just a lot of strain on our relationship as well at this point. It felt like we agreed that, you know, we would try and conceive naturally for about 6 months until going back to be referred for assisted conception. And I was so convinced that, no, that's not going to have to happen to us. Like, no, I'm not going to have to go through that route. And again, it's something that I didn't really look into, like IVF, but then I had started to have a look, like, what does that involve if these 6 months are up and we decide to be referred? It really took a strain on like intimacy in our relationship, because it was kind of like, well, you know, we've got to conceive. Like, this month we've got to conceive. Like,
Yeah.
And so it was almost like being intimate just to conceive. Yeah, like actually it can take the enjoyment out of it, but you're not just thinking about conceiving, you're also thinking about your reproductive health and, okay, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with him? And that feeling of like, isn't this what my body's supposed to do? Like, my body's supposed to make babies. Like, that's what I thought about when I was a little girl. Like, I couldn't wait for this moment of being a mom. But in one way, the doctor's saying it shouldn't be an issue, but then it could be. And it's like, yeah, you're trying to relax through that time. And I think we actually went on holiday. I'm sure we went on holiday just to kind of help relax us, just to like recuperate. But you still got those thoughts in your mind, and they just can't help but play on you, like even when you're just trying to enjoy it. So the 6 months were up and it was like, okay, like let's go for to be referred. So as much as we felt it was going to be a positive moment, it probably wasn't. I can definitely say for my emotional and mental well-being, like I was in a really low place at that point. And I know that they say that stress can hinder your chances of getting pregnant. So maybe in some ways, maybe did I bring stress on myself? I don't know. It's very hard to relax, especially after having gone through the testing. And I think as well, like I said earlier, I was naive at the fact that I thought that with me being under 30, I wouldn't have issues getting pregnant. And so all these thoughts that I'd had before, it was like, oh, well, that's not true. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, I have an auntie who had her two younger children, you know, coming up to 40 with no issues. And you just don't know. Every woman's different. So age really is nothing but a number.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Deciding to go for IVF is a decision that can be made in the moment, but the actual process can be long and a whole other emotional roller coaster.
You know, I feel like, if I'm honest, it's so, just as I'm talking about it, I really feel like this is a point in my life that I've kind of blocked out, because as I'm talking about it now, you know, it was not long ago. My son is like 21 months. I probably have blocked this part out of my mind, like since having my son. I think you're not able to, you're kind of going through all these practical procedures and you're not dealing with your emotions. You're just kind of like doing what you can to get pregnant, but emotionally, you're just not dealing with it. And that, I mean, that's something that's definitely been highlighted since like after having my son. Sorry. Oh my gosh.
No, fine. It's absolutely fine. Because obviously people don't know that. And maybe there are people listening to this who might also feel the same, but I've never been able to like vocalize it or talk about it. So it's important.
So when I say I think I blocked it out in the fact that, you know, you just got your back and forth. I don't know how many times I went within, it was not long to be fair, because when you're referred, they have to make sure that you begin your IVF process at least 3 months after being referred. They really were onto it. It wasn't a long waiting process.
Now might be a good time to mention the official NICE guidelines around IVF, and there's a bit of bureaucratic jargon to explain. First of all, NICE stands for National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, and it's an organisation that provides national guidance and advice to improve health and social care. Clinical Commissioning Groups, or CCGs, are the ones actually in charge of the hospital and community NHS services that are available in a particular local area. Now, according to NICE guidelines, women under 40 are entitled to 3 rounds of IVF on the NHS, but the Fertility Fairness 2017 report showed that only 12% of CCGs offer the full 3 cycles, with the vast majority of them only offering one. What's worse is that there are some CCGs, like mine, that do not offer IVF at all. What you get access to depends on where you live, and this is what we mean when we talk about a postcode lottery. This continues when it comes to who is deemed eligible for IVF treatment or not. Now, the Department of Health says that IVF should be offered as long as one member of the couple does not have any biological children, but 81% of CCGs will not offer IVF to any couple where one is already a biological parent, even if that child is from a previous relationship with a previous partner. But yeah, even if you do manage to get the rounds of IVF that you should have, the process is not fun. Grace said that some of the tests she was meant to have were so excruciating, and she believes that they affected her emotional health even more.
You are given like hormone injections that you have to take at least a week or two, I think from about a week and a half before the egg retrieval, so the egg collection. So that's having to inject yourself. So they teach you how to do that. Yeah, I mean, I think when I had to do that, it was very much like, okay, let's just do it. Like, I didn't want to give myself a chance to think about it. I just wanted to get on with it. It wasn't easy. I think people with diabetes have to inject themselves, don't they? And so this for me was just within a week or so. It was still hard. It was really hard, like once in the morning, once in the afternoon, I think. And that restricted how, you know, if you wanted to go out or if friends had events or whatever, you know, a birthday or something, it was very restricting because, well, at this time you have to take an injection. So, you know, you're going to do that when you're out. So that week was, or week or so, was just like I'm not available. The clinic are constantly like calling you every so many days just to check how you're feeling. And then the day comes when you are going in for the egg retrieval. The point of the injections is to stimulate your ovaries so that you produce more eggs at a faster rate. Now, women can respond differently to that. They give you different doses depending on what your test results were before. And again, there wasn't much concern in regards to my testing, as was, you know, shown before without unexplained infertility. So I was on quite a low dose. However, in regards to with the hormones, my body overstimulated. Because of that, I developed OHSS, which stands for ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which is a common risk to women that have IVF. So that is when you're like, yeah, you're basically are oversensitive to the hormones, and it's just can cause like complications with your abdomen area. You know, you can get fluid. I had fluid on my abdomen, really extreme bloating.
Due to the OHSS, Grace had to wait longer than normal for the next stage, the embryo transfer, to take place. Where usually it would take place 5 days after the egg retrieval, Grace had to wait 4 months. But despite the physical toll of the process, she did say that the healthcare professionals were caring and understanding.
Fortunately, it was the assisted conception unit, so everyone there is there for the same reason. But the, you know, you've got a waiting area. It's kind of, it's quiet. But I personally, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I know that I've spoken with other women whose experiences are so different to mine. But at the hospital that we were at, I can say that it just felt so much more comfortable in comparison to being at our home hospital, where we were in that early pregnancy unit. Just knowing that there are people around or couples around us who understand the journey. And the staff there are just so caring, and they understand where, well, for us, I say more so for me, because I think sometimes health professionals are talking to the woman because she's going through the procedure, but not always acknowledging that actually, you know, your partner is also going through this as well. And it's often the partner who's trying to be strong for the, you know, his wife, or, you know, girlfriend, or whatever it is, and he's not able to deal with his emotions either. Yeah, that's kind of difficult as well, because yes, as women, yeah, we are the ones going through the procedure, but, you know, you're in this together as well, you know what I mean? Like, you both want the child. It's not just you.
Thankfully, Grace's first round of IVF was successful, and despite the trauma and the complications she had experienced before, when it came time for the embryo to be transferred, it was an amazing experience for her and her husband.
You're seeing your embryo, like, be inserted, and you can see it, and it's like, it's just amazing. It's like a flash of lightning, like, on the screen. I don't know, it's just mad. Obviously, you have to wait for implantation. I can see how traumatic that would be for women who, where it's not successful, because you've seen that go back into you. I honestly don't know how I would have been had it not been successful. And for a lot of women, I know that first time it's not. So I'm really fortunate that it was. I had a real positive pregnancy. Like, you know, with IVF pregnancies, there's a lot of like risks that can follow, like preeclampsia, gestational diabetes. Yeah, and I guess you could say that I had a real straightforward pregnancy. You know, with IVF pregnancies, you are seeing I can't speak for everyone. Again, there's different procedures at different hospitals, but I was seen maybe a couple of other times than, you know, normal pregnancy, just to check on things that where it could be a risk because of it being an IVF pregnancy, but there was no concerns for me. So I'm really thankful about that. Again, I was in a research Zoom call the other day with some women who had IVF pregnancies, and the amount of stories that there were where they'd had complications in pregnancy. Once you finish at the assisted conception unit and you're referred back over to the normal pregnancy department, I think there's not enough information that's kind of like transferred over. By the sounds of it, it's as if, you know, you're treated a bit more like it's just a normal pregnancy, whereas actually it's not. And I think there needs to be more that's being taken seriously, which is why this research is taking place. Again, my experience wasn't like that. And I'm sure if it was, had it not been successful, how I would have felt like during that time and during pregnancy with IVF, like, you know, you're already on an emotional roller coaster, then you get pregnant. And it's as if, like, for anyone who knows that you've gone down that route, it's like, oh, great. Like, you know, this is what you wanted kind of thing. But it doesn't heal like the scars that you went, you know, that you were scarred with on that journey. Like, yes, you're pregnant now, but you still have to heal. You've got a lot of healing to do. And I think, like I said, for me, I'm thankful that I had a pretty normal pregnancy, but had I not, it would have just really, I think it would have just affected my emotional health even more. And, you know, my son is 21 months, and I think it's since he's been born that I've actually started to really deal with the effects on my emotional health and my mental health. Like, I know that, you know, it's all very physical in regards to the testing that you have and the procedures, but yeah, I think your body can kind of recover from that. And it's internally that you are, you have, you know, a lot of internal scars that you have to deal with.
I'm really, really grateful that Grace was open to speak with me about her experience. She's a friend, but we've never actually directly talked about what IVF was like for her. And if I'm being honest, I feel bad to know that she was going through all of this and I had no idea and never even thought to ask her about it until now.
As I'm talking about it, I can definitely say that I think it continues to highlight a lot of things that I've not dealt with on the journey. And that's probably also because I'm at a point where I would like, you know, my son to have siblings. And as we think about, you know, my son having siblings, it's like, okay, how does that happen? You know, are we still going to go down this route again, or can that happen naturally? And I think it's kind of like, will the next time be like it was before? Or it doesn't have to be. And I think I know what to expect if we were to have to do it again. But yeah, it's just interesting.
Culture and religion play such an important role in shaping our ideas around fertility, conception, and motherhood. It's often these ideas that can make topics taboo or not.
So I'm a Christian, and a lot of the reason why I was so sure that I wouldn't have to go down that route was because, well, God's going to make it happen for me. So, you know, he wouldn't let me have to go through that kind of thing. And so I did spend a lot of time praying about that. And it is difficult because, you know, there are a lot of ethical reasons to why people don't go down that route. And again, even now, like, you know, I have frozen embryos, and it's like, are they seen as a life now? Or when do you see it as a life? And that's something that my husband and I have had lots of discussions about. And I think that's something that couples, it's personal to them and their decision. And I think for me, when we were going through the procedure, I was thankful that, you know, I probably felt the procedure itself, as much as like the journey to get there had caused a lot of heartache, I did feel peace going into the procedure. Like, it was difficult, don't get me wrong, but there was some kind of peace that I felt. And I can't say I wasn't anxious, because I think anyone who's going, you know, who's going to be under anesthetic and is having some kind of surgery or, you know, at a hospital, it's nerve-wracking and there's risks to your health. But there was a peace that I felt. And yeah, I felt that it was right for us to do this. As I start to think about, you know, having siblings, having another child, I want to be in a better place. You know, I don't know if pregnancy will again look like going down that route again, or if that will be a natural conception. The experience of, you know, how I felt before, I wouldn't want, you know, if we were having to go and use our frozen embryos, you know, I want to be in a better place mentally. What that looks like, you know, I think I can definitely say that my marriage has had loads of heat. Like, we're in a better, an amazing place now, like, compared to what we were during and after. And I wouldn't say that we kind of actively were like, okay, look, this is what's happening. Like, we're not in a good place. Let's get better. I think we knew that we weren't in a good place, though. Mm. And we knew there were areas that we needed to work on. And it's just kind of been gradual over time. As they say, time is a healer. So that's been really positive. But I think for me personally, I have to realize that I am still a woman, and regardless of like how I conceive, I'm no less of a woman if we have to go down the route of assisted conception. And that was a big thing that affected me. I think it's kind of gaining my confidence back in who I am and my identity, and not allowing the journey itself to become my identity, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, and maybe that's because, again, going back to the start, being that little girl, remembering myself walking around the street with my little twin pushchair and my twin dolls. And that was the, you know, that was me mimicking myself as an adult. And yeah, I guess it all comes from that, just that little girl wanting that. But I'm still Grace, and I think it's just finding out, you know, just looking at my identity and that kind of thing.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Black Bella Presents a Survival Guide. Please rate and review us in Apple Podcasts so more people can find the show. And also please subscribe wherever you usually listen to podcasts and come back next week. Now, if anything that we've spoken about today has affected you in any way, please do contact Fertility Network UK and find out what support there is available for you. That's fertilitynetworkuk.org. This episode was written by me, Jandela Benson, and produced by Christina Moore from Don't Skip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.